ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Fourth incarnation, the Lord became Nara and Narayan, the twin sons of the wife of King Dharma. Thus he undertook severe and exemplary penances to control the senses. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. As King Rishab advised his sons, tapasya, or voluntary acceptance of penance for realization of the transcendence, is the only duty of the human being. It was so done by the Lord Himself in an exemplary manner to teach us. The Lord is very kind to the forgetful souls. He therefore comes himself and leaves behind necessary instructions, and also sends his good sons as representatives to call all the conditioned souls back to Godhead. Recently, within the memory of everyone, Lord Chaitanya also appeared for the same purpose, to show special favor to the fallen souls of this age of iron industry. The incarnation of Narayan is worshipped still at Badri Narayan on the range of the Himalayas. Translation. In the fourth incarnation, the Lord became Nara and Narayan, the twin sons of the wife of King Dharma. Thus he undertook severe and exemplary penances control the senses. In this chapter of the first canto of the Bhagavatam, Srila Suta Goswami is explaining the various principal incarnations of Lord Sri Krishna, how they appeared, why they appeared. Krishna tells us in Gita, paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam dharma samstapanarataya sambhavami yuge yuge, that he appears to protect the pious, to annihilate the demoniac, and to reestablish the principles of religion. And in each and every incarnation of the Lord, we find a wonderful lesson to be learned. We find the sublime truths which uncover the treasures of the precious jewels of divine love which is within our own hearts. This evening we are reading about this most glorious an inconceivable avatar of the name Nara and Narayan. It is described that they came and they manifested one of the great opulences of God, Aishwaryasya. It is described by Parasara Muni that the Supreme Lord possesses six opulences in full, eternally. Each of these opulences is all attractive. In fact, even in this world that we live in, the grossest materialistic people, they are all aspiring and working so hard to acquire any one or more of these six opulences, knowing that if they have these opulences, they will be attractive. And through this attraction, there is the promise that they will enjoy. The opulence of beauty. What people go through these days to try to make themselves beautiful. And even if you are beautiful, the pains and the money spent to try to keep yourself beautiful, it's really a losing cause. Because old age, the force of time, gradually takes away all beauty. But somehow or other, we are trying to cling to whatever beauty we have because we are so much frightened. We're petrified of the thought that people will not be attracted to me anymore. And then there is the opulence of knowledge. People go to elementary school, then they go to grade school, then they go to high school, then they go to college, then they work on their master's degree, then they work on their PhDs. They just labor years and years and years, just beating their brains against these books, simply to acquire a little piece of the opulence of knowledge, thinking if I am very learned, highly educated, I will be very attractive. People will be very much impressed by me. And the next opulence is wealth. You all know what people go through to make money, good wealth. To have a nice house, to have a nice new car, to have good bank balance, to be giving nice charity, to leave nice tips, to have all nice facilities. People will think he is very great. He is very attractive. The next opulence is strength. Some people, they work hours and hours and hours a day lifting weights and running miles and miles and miles and spending exorbitant amounts of money in health clubs and just training in all sorts of athletics just so that they will be very attractive by their opulence of strength. There is another opulence, the opulence of fame. Some people, they'll do anything for fame. Some musicians, they'll sit and for years and years and years and years, they'll just practice 10, 15, 20 hours a day just so that they become famous as great musicians or famous authors or famous businessmen. People struggle, strive. The valuable energy of God has given us, knowing that anyone who is famous is very, very attractive. People love to meet famous people. Even if you hate them, still you want to meet them. Even if you think they're terrible, crazy people. It's like the President of the United States. Even in the United States, nobody likes him. But to have your picture taken with them, you will put it in the most prominent place in your office, your house, your car, everywhere. Just see, I have met someone famous. But he's a rascal. Nobody likes him. That doesn't matter. He's famous. So you become very attractive if you're famous, for whatever it may be. And the next opulence is renunciation. Some people, they give up their homes, they give up all the luxuries of life, they sleep under the ground, they just wear one little piece of cloth, they beg for food, just so that people will be attracted to them for being very, very renounced. Just see, I am so detached, I am so wonderful, I am so great. So these are the six opulences that everyone in this world aspires for. And everyone in this world is attracted by these six opulences. But Krishna, Bhagwan, is he who possesses all these opulences in full, unlimitedly, and simultaneously. If you have all knowledge, If you know everything past, present, and future, know the thought of every living being's heart, and know everything that's ever been said by anyone in the history of the world and everything that is going to be said in the history of creation. If you have that type of knowledge, then you are God. If you do not have that type of knowledge, forget this idea that you can ever become God. If you have all wealth, if you are the proprietor of everything that exists, if you have all strength, if you have all fame and all beauty, then you are God. This is Krishna. Krishna is the proprietor and the only proprietor of all these opulences in full. And Krishna explains in the Gita that if any being in this world has even one tiny little fragment of a part of my opulence, they become very great. But all that opulence is coming from me. It is mine. Mamaivam so jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. We are all part of Krishna. Therefore, we all have for a very infinitesimal portion, we can manifest the opulences of God. But an intelligent person, rather than trying to imitate Krishna or compete with Krishna, simply wants to love Krishna. That Krishna already possesses all opulences in full, so why not just glorify him instead of glorifying my infinitesimal little abilities? Instead of being attracted to all the little particles of attractive features of this world, why not just surrender our consciousness to love and appreciate the supreme opulence of Krishna? It is only when our consciousness learns to revive its original nature, which is to be utterly attracted by Krishna, can we find real peace and real fulfillment. Because the fact is, all Krishna's opulences are unlimited and eternal, and our love and attraction will be unlimited and eternal only when we learn how to love Krishna. And this is the goal of life, to simply know how to be attracted to Krishna. And that is the real reason Krishna comes to this world, to teach us how to be attracted to his supreme opulence, and to reveal his opulence in such a way that makes all others so insignificant that we cannot do anything but surrender our lives in love to the Supreme Lord. So in this most wonderful incarnation, Narnarayan Rishi, he is displaying his supreme opulence of renunciation, Vairagya. He appeared at Badrik Ashram, more often called Badrinath. Many of you have been there. It is one of the four dhams of the Himalayas. Kedarnath, Jamunotri, Gangotri, and Badrinath. And many wonderful incidents took place here at Badrinath. It is a very austere place, you know. 7 months a year, human beings cannot even go there because it is covered by so much snow that all the roads are blocked and it's very cold. This is the place that the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna decided to incarnate. And he performed tapasya. It is said by Lord Rishabhdev, Tapo divyam putra ke yena satvam sudyajasyam brahma sokyam tvanantam nayam deho deha vajamne loke kastan kaman arhati vidyidomke Tapo divyam putra ke yena satvam sudyajasyam brahma sokyam tvanantam. That now that you have attained this valuable human form of life, please, Krishna says, do not waste it looking for the objects of the senses and sense gratification. Whatever form of sense gratification you have will never satisfy you, because sense gratification is available for the dogs and hogs that eat stool. Huh? Haribo. human form of life is meant for tapasya. To voluntarily give up this sense gratification for the higher purpose of self-realization. Because only through divine consciousness can we experience real joy and real peace. So Narayan Rishi were performing such a type of austerity, such a type of tapasya. And through tapasya, we attain power, even in the material sense. We read in the scriptures of all these great, great demons, the greatest materialists in the history of this planet. Who were they? Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, Ravana, Kamsa. Huh? They had so much wealth, they had so much power, they had so much everything, control. But where did they get it all from? Tapasya. Hiranyakashipu performed so much tapasya. Ravana, so much tapasya. Kamsa. And in this day they became very, very, very great. So even in the material sense, without tapasya, you cannot achieve anything great. The most wealthiest, the most famous, the most strong, the most attractive people in this world are people who work very, very, very hard and are willing to give up so much to attain that. But also in spiritual life, there is no possibility of any real spiritual advancement without tapasya. Without forsaking certain comforts and luxuries of life, for the purpose of a higher realization, a higher attainment. Human form of life is meant for only one purpose, tapasya. To become Krishna conscious. Just like in our Krishna consciousness movement, our Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, divine grace, tell us, the minimum tapasya is you follow these four regulative principles. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. He said this basic austerity of no meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex, if you follow these principles, Prabhupada told us, then you attain the position of being a human being. Until you follow these principles, you are essentially an animal. Huh? Human life is meant for tapasya. When you perform these tapasyas, you're a human. And if you want to attain divine consciousness, then you every day you hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. And every day you chant the holy names of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. But this chanting of the holy name becomes a tapasya when we do it every single day, no matter what. Even if we have to give up our eating or our sleeping, even if we have to give up talking on the telephone with our friends, even if we have to give up watching television, even if we have to give up whatever else you do. Somehow or other, you must chant regulated, with discipline and attention, the holy names of Krishna. And you must hear the Bhagavatam, and you must associate with sadhus regularly. Even if it's difficult, even if you have to drive long distances, even if you'd rather sit home and relax. There's so many things you could be doing. But to simply accept these principles of chanting the holy names, associating with sadhus, hearing the Bhagavatam, giving a portion of our wealth for the betterment of mankind, that's a tapasya, charity. Without performing these activities, there's no real spiritual advancement. And the more we do it in such a way that it gives us a little pain, the more we advance. That is Krishna consciousness. So the Lord came and he performed such tapasya that no one had ever seen. And by his tapasya, he was getting tremendous power, tremendous spiritual and material strength. Austerities create character in a devotee's life. He said, a devotee without character cannot do anything substantial. Sense gratification ruins our character. Sense gratification dwindles the dignity of our spirituality in every respect. But when we're willing to execute the order of Guru and do the will of God, even when it hurts, even when it's a great difficulty, it creates substance, dignity, and character in our life. It is that character which impresses other human beings and attracts the heart of God. Naranarayan Rishi, the austerities they performed are explained in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, how they were fasting, how they were standing in one place through the winters of Badrinath, and the type of concentration that they were in, that they were exerting in their meditation, was incomparable. No human being could possibly do it in millions and millions and millions of births. So, Indra, the king of the demigods, he became very much frightened. Because, you know, the more you have, the more you fear. Why? Because the more you have to lose, and the more people want what you have. What do I have to lose? I mean, if anyone wants to steal this cloth, someone will give me another one, no problem. That's about really all I have. So if you don't have much, you have really not much to lose, and therefore you really don't have much to worry about and be afraid of and protect. But the more you have, the more you're always suspicious. That does this person like me, or does he like what I have? Huh? Is this person saying this because he wants something of me, or is this person saying this because he really means it? Huh? When people say something, what do they have to get from me, right? If they don't like me, they tell me, you're a rascal. And if they like me, they say, Haribo. Everything's simple. But the more you have, the more complicated your life becomes. Not only are you suspicious of everybody, even your own family members sometimes, you even begin to doubt their own motives. But you also just have so much to protect, so much to maintain. It becomes a great burden. All types of security devices, all types of sophisticated locking systems in so many places, guards, all sorts of work just to maintain what you have. Of course, if you're Krishna conscious and you accept that all of these things belong to Krishna and you're protecting them on behalf of Krishna and you're preserving them on behalf of Krishna, then it actually becomes joyful, becomes an expression of love. Every time you lock a door, you're thinking, oh, Krishna, I'm doing this for you, Haribo. And it's blissful. There's no fear. It's service. This is Krishna consciousness. You can have all those things, but if you're not using them for your own sense enjoyment, but you're using them for the service of the Lord, then you could have them but not be entangled by the bondage And that is the real art of living, detachment. Whether you're a multimillionaire or whether you're a sannyasi living in this, under a tree, if you're detached, whatever you have or don't have, you'll be joyful in life. And if you're attached, you must suffer, you must fear, you must be suspicious, and life becomes unbearable. So, usually the more you have in material consciousness, the more you fear. Because the more you think someone's trying to get what you have. And Indra has so much. So anytime anyone is getting great power, he's thinking, he must be getting this great power because he wants to steal away my wealth, my fortune, my wife. Huh? Just like if a man has an ugly wife, he really doesn't care if anyone looks at her or not, right? But if a man has a beautiful wife, any man that looks at her, he's thinking, why is he looking at my wife? Huh? I don't have any personal experience, but this is what I have heard. Huh? I have rightly heard. That's because it says it in the scriptures. We are only repeating God's words. So in this way, the better you have it, the more you become very fearful. So Indra has all these beautiful apsaras dancing around him. And he has all these wonderful, wonderful palaces and so many servants. So when Narayan Rishi, when they were doing their tapasya, Indra was convinced that they want my wife, they want my apsara ladies, and they want my wealth, and they want my position. Otherwise, you wouldn't be doing this tapasya. Not like this. So he decided that I'm going to destroy his tapasya. I'm going to make him immoral. And once he becomes immoral, he's going to lose all his spiritual strength. Because saintly people, you know, spiritual people, when they engage in immoral activities, they lose all the credits of their spirituality, of all their discipline and tapasya after many years. It's lost. At least, it's on pause. It's on hold. Until we revive that consciousness. So, Indra sent for Kamadev. You all know who Kamadev is. You all know him, whether you know it or not, because he's controlling this whole world, and he's controlling all of our lives. Kamadev is, in the English language, known as Cupid. And he's the god of material attachment. Any sexual attraction that we have within our heart, it is by the influence of this demigod named Kamadev. So he's the supreme master in this world of material desires. Kamadev, he never fails. So he went to where Narayan Rishi was on the order of Indra. I want you to make this man fall from his discipline. So Kamadev invited, with Indra's help, the most beautiful, beautiful possible ladies, heavenly damsels, not the female creatures of this world, but heavenly damsels. We may think that our women are beautiful, but compared to the heavenly damsels, they are like rats and cockroaches. They're nothing. Huh? To us, they're beautiful, but to the heavenly damsels, of course, if they're devotees, their hearts are beautiful. But physically, it's all relative, very insignificant. So there were these most beautiful, magnificent, heavenly damsels. When they perspire, it's like the sweetest perfume. When they breathe, they completely intoxicate your consciousness. You become intoxicated like drugs, just by smelling their breath. And they don't even brush their teeth or use mouthwash or anything like that. It's natural. Huh? What to speak if they even raise one of their eyebrows? People fall unconscious. This is the power of their beauty. Anyways, I don't want to meditate on this too much. So anyways, they were doing all these things. Plus, they were dancing. Ah, you can imagine how they danced with their ankle bells and their bangles. They were dancing in so many amorous gestures, and they were singing. And it explains that the sound of their voice was like ambrosial nectar. And meanwhile, while all of this was going on, and they were in a circle around Narayan Rishi, doing all these things, dancing and singing and just breathing and everything. Ah. And meanwhile, Kamadev, he created a most beautiful, beautiful surrounding. He turned this terribly cold, snowy atmosphere into a paradise where there was lotus flowers and jasmine flowers just blooming, and gentle cool breezes carrying the fragrance, and sweet auspicious birds chirp 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 singing on wonderful auspicious trees, and lakes and gardens and waterfalls. He created such a heavenly environment that it was impossible for anyone to resist from being sensually attracted. But Narayan Rishi just continued his tapasya. Cupid was helpless. What to do? What am I to do? He even shot the arrow of lust, of kama, into the heart of Narayan Rishi. So Narayan Rishi opened his eyes, and he looked around, and he saw all this heavenly paradise around him, and he saw these most beautiful, beautiful heavenly damsels, and he laughed. What is this? You think this is nice? From his body came heavenly damsels that made the heavenly damsels look like rats and cockroaches. Huh? And all the heavenly damsels were thinking, who are we compared to them? And Kamadev saw, my God, this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How can we attract him? Within him is all opulence. We are trying to attract him by the opulences of this world, this material world, but within him is all the opulences in full. And he's just revealing a little tiny particle of his opulence, and it's billions and trillions of times greater than anything of this world. So Cupid became very much afraid that because I've done this just to make him fall down, he may try to destroy me. So he was very much afraid, and all the apsaras were all bowing down. Please forgive us. Narayan Rishi looked at them. Says, what? You think I take all this nonsense seriously? Your childishness? I know Indra has sent you. In fact, you can take one of these nice ladies, her name is Urvasi, and you can give to Indra. Tell him this is a donation. Tell him I don't care anything for his heavenly opulence and wealth. It's all a source of bondage, entanglement, and suffering. So let him keep it. In this way, he demonstrated how much he was not only detached but even detached from anger, which is one of the hardest things to control. So why did Narayan Rishi perform this wonderful pastime? Srila Prabhupada explains in this purport. Simply to show special favor to the fallen souls of this world. And the two most important instructions is, one, by his example we should know that tapasya must be performed. And two, that we should know that if we have Krishna, we have everything. Everything is contained within Krishna. Rupa Goswami said, if you can purchase Krishna in the marketplace, give everything you have. You will not be the loser, but you will gain millions, billions, trillions of times over. There is nothing so precious, there is nothing so priceless as realization of Krishna, love for Krishna, the beautiful darshan of Krishna, who is seated within our very heart. Krishna is within the heart of every living being. He's also within and between every atom. And the greatest poverty is to not see him, to not feel him, to not know him, and to not love him. And the only real wealth, the only real fortune in all of this creation is realization of Krishna, love for Krishna, experience of Krishna in our lives. Everything that we're looking for, in everything we are pursuing in life, the fulfillment of that desire can only be had in Krishna. We are searching after a man, we are searching after a woman, we are searching after money, we're searching after fame, we're searching after strength, we're searching after security. We're searching after so many things in this world. We're searching after nice food. But the fulfillment of all of our searching will only be had when we learn to search for all of those things in Krishna and Krishna alone. There's no other way. Therefore, in whatever activity we have, in whatever duties in occupation we have in life, whatever our direction, we must perform our work for the pleasure and the service of Krishna. That is the perfection of life. And how merciful Krishna is, that he is manifesting all of his glory and opulence within the sound of his holy name. Simply by chanting Krishna's name, we can experience all the power, the glory, and the beauty, all the sweetness of the Absolute Truth. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said that the chanting of the holy name of Krishna is the prime, the supreme benediction for all humanity, because it awakens our original natural consciousness. Anandam buddhivardhanam pratipadam punamritasvadanam. It gives us the bliss, the pleasure, the joy that we are searching for throughout our life. Therefore, All of the great acharyas and all of the great scriptures claim unanimously that the wealthiest, the most fortunate of all beings is that person who relishes the holy name of Krishna, who knows the importance of the chanting of the name of Krishna, and who every day takes shelter of the name of Krishna. That person is most fortunate. He is the wealthiest, the greatest of all persons. Because everything that exists in all its glory is contained within the name of Krishna. If you have Krishna, you have everything. If you do not have Krishna, all you have is an illusion of bondage. So therefore, Krishna must be our first priority in life. Krishna must be the goal of everything we do. And the purpose of whatever we dedicate our life to, whether it be our jobs, whether it be our families, whether it be our puja, it is all for Krishna. So therefore, the greatest of all tapasya is to regularly chant the holy name of Krishna with attention. What Naranarayan Rishi demonstrated by living in the Himalayas, what the great yogis attempt to attain by fasting, by living in the mountains in the winter, living in caves, by sitting without sleep, without eat, in full concentration, restraining their senses, following strict celibacy rules, what those persons cannot attain after lifetimes of such practices, you can attain living in your own home if you simply learn how to properly chant the holy name of Krishna. Vishvamitra Muni performed such tapasya, and he gained great power, but he fell victim to Maya because he didn't fix his consciousness on the name of God. But Haridas Thakur, his only tapasya was to simply chant the holy names every day regulated, and even Maya herself became his disciple. This is the power and glory of the holy name of Krishna. Is there anything more worthy, anything more valuable, anything greater to dedicate our lives to than this? So therefore, every day, we must put a certain time aside to attentively, with great feeling and devotion, chant the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. And it is so simple. Even these beautiful little children, they can perfect their lives by chanting the names of Krishna. So let us follow in the footsteps of these young children, and with great enthusiasm and devotion, call out.